Accession number 24192, reel 15.
Mr. Taylor, reel 15. We were talking about the SLR, and you've just mentioned that you didn't actually have it till just after the amalgamation. We were talking about differences. So, you know, basically, why do you think they bothered to change it? That's what I'm really getting down to. If it was it that the not such an experienced recruit could fire faster with it because it had self-loading, or what? Why do you think they did it? In other words, change it.
I think at that time they were updating a lot of different things throughout the army. I think it was moving on. I think that's one of the reasons, because the tanks were changing, the artillery pieces were changing at that time. So I think it's probably one of the aspects of the infantry, moving on a bit.
Any other weapons upgraded at the time?
We got they changed the old LMG, the Bren gun, for a can't remember the name of it now.
It'll come back to you.
Yeah. They changed the LMG for a light machine gun, another light machine gun.
And what was that like?
That was quite good. You could fire it on a fire it on a tripod. You could fire it from a vehicle. They had special fixtures on a vehicle. You could fire it from. Or you could set up a tripod and fix it and fire it on fixed lines, as opposed to firing it from lying position. And that, I think it fired 120 rounds a minute. I think it still does, actually. I think they've improved it slightly, but the particular one that I think they've improved the gun itself more. Now that when it first came out, same as they done with the SA-80, I think. I think it was a good change, actually. I think the LMG was sort of, it was, although it was a good gun,
the Bren was good. But
I think it was good, but I think the tactics were changing, and I think you had to have something different. I think that was the thinking on it. Either that or they run out of spare parts for it. I don't know. But, it was an improvement. Any other
new weapons? Grenades or mortars or anything that you were aware of? Vickers still staying?
All I can still remember was the old Mills grenade. We were still using them. I think all these newfangled grenades came in at a later date, after I left. So I left the battalion anyway.
Now, what about these new tactics? In what way were tactics changed?
I think the idea was that smaller movement of bodies on the ground during an advance of contact or a section attack, whether it be a section attack, a platoon attack, or a company attack, the idea was to get smaller numbers of people moving on the ground to be covered by your machine gun on the flank or from other people within the company or platoon. And I think this was a lot of thinking on this, because everybody walking up, you get a lot of casualties. So I think this is one of the thinking of it. And I know we used to do the exercises, an exercise on that on this sort of setup, and it did work. It seemed to work better. Once you got into the swing of it, then everybody knew exactly what everybody was doing, and who was commanding who, and make sure that everybody knew who was on the right flank and who was on the left flank and sort of thing. And the atomic bomb. That was one of the setups we had. You'd do an exercise, and you had to be at a certain point. You knew at a certain point that the atom bomb was going to drop, and everybody had to go to ground, and you had to prepare to lay down, put your hands on your stomach, and this sort of thing, head down. So sort of save yourself if the explosion occurred around the area, this sort of thing. But I mean, you had no chance. I wouldn't thought if an atom bomb had a drop, but these sort of things that were coming up at the time. But it didn't last very long. That they soon forgot about that. I know that one exercise we were on, and they said the atom bomb had just dropped, and we were still walking across this field. So it didn't work, really, that sort of thing.
Did you have any extra protective clothing, either anti-radiation or gas or anything?
Yeah, we had the special suits for which we experimented on at one time somewhere.
What were these special suits? Were they anti-radiation or were they everything?
Yeah.
What were they like?
Heavy, hot, sweaty. And of course, you wore your respirator at the same time as well. It was a complete. It was like a. They were more like a wetsuit, only a bit looser, so you could sort of get inside them. But they were very heavy. We had to run over the salt course and everything in them. At the end, you probably lost a couple of pounds in doing that. Very, very hot and heavy. And I think they've now changed them to a far more wearable type suit.
We haven't really mentioned gas masks before. What type of gas mask did you have?
Had the type where you had the. There was no filter on it like the wartime one. It was just a mask with your filter in the front. The eyes. And I can't remember what mark it was, probably Mark IV or something. And we used to do that with the recruits, actually, teach them how to wear and throw some gas in the building and send them in and get them to take it off, take the respirator off, and on the way out. So they just got a taste of the tear gas. It was only tear gas, actually. The only trouble is, if you were standing in there all the time, it got in your clothes and everywhere. I mean, I used to have to take my clothes off before I went home because of tear gas in the suit. But this is the sort of thing you used to do just so they had some idea of what tear gas was like.
Now, what do you remember of your time in Germany then? Was the training routine, I mean, this development that you've mentioned, but was there any change in the overall training program that you discussed before when you were at Isilan?
I think once you had the army exercises in Germany at that time, where the whole of the BAOR were on the exercise, on the same exercise in different areas.
What were these big, huge army exercises like?
A lot of movement. You used to wonder who was at the top end asking you to do these things, really. There's a lot of movement, and you were followed around by the Germans, so if you pull the fence down, they'd write it down to claim your compensation. Or if you went into a farmyard and probably want the dairy to cook your stuff in, then he'd claim compensation for that. If somebody wanted a bed, like Major Creasy, he'd charge for that as well. But there was a lot of movement around.
Lot of damage done?
Especially with the tanks. I mean, they cross ploughed fields and corn fields and beet fields and, all the root crops and this sort of thing. And roads, of course, houses, gardens, fences, everything. Was a lot of damage done.
Did the tanks do most of it, or would an infantry battalion like yourselves do much damage?
Well, not really. I mean, we didn't have the vehicles. If you came to a fence, you climbed over it, to a certain extent. There was sometimes you had to pull a fence down to get through, but in the main, the people on foot didn't make too much damage. The only sort of vehicle you had was the old stalwart at that time, which is one of the vehicles that you could swim it across the river. Or
what was the stalwart? Can you describe it? I don't know the stalwart. They don't have them now, do they?
It was a six-wheel vehicle. high side, it probably, I suppose the top to the top of the side of the vehicle was probably 7 foot. You could put a cover over it.
What was it replacing? Was it replacing half tracks or what?
I think it probably did. I think replaced the half tracks.
Was it wheeled?
It's wheeled, yeah. And if you had a puncture in one wheel, you could change it, because all the wheels drove the vehicle. So if you had a puncture in one, or something wrong with one, you could put a small piece of metal in, a clip or something in the other, and you could transfer the drive from that wheel to the other one. So you still had the same amount of drive on the vehicle. You could swim it across the river, just drive down and drive in and drive across the other side. That was quite good. It was quite big actually. You could carry a lot of stuff on it.
Would there be enough so that everyone had a place on one, or would
no,
they?
No, no.
So you weren't mechanised?
No, at that time we weren't. It was mainly used for stores and kit from carrying from one point to another. The truck would drive around, give them a map reference to drive around a meter at a certain point, depending on what sort of terrain or everything you're going across. That was
the main thing. Did you call them trucks? Or lorries? Or were they just stalwarts?
They were stalwart. Yeah, stalwart. Yeah.
That's what you called them.
That's what we called them. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other vehicles?
Well, we didn't have APCs then. I mean, they were around, but we hadn't got them at that time. We had mainly four ton Bedfords, stalwarts, 1500 weight trucks, Jeeps. We had some Land Rovers, and that's about it really. There's no as I said, there was no APCs at that time.
How are you getting on with the Germans at this time? I know that sounds bad, but I mean, the war was quite a while away, by then, 14, 15 years before. Were they starting to resent the presence of the British Army, or how did they react?
No, they didn't appear to. I thought the farmers and the locals who were claiming compensation, they knew they were going to get it, and they were quite entitled to do what they did, but there was never... I don't think there's any resentment. I never pound anywhere.
So when you went out for an evening, there was no problem?
No, no.
So what else?
Probably the odd scuffle here and there, I suppose, but nothing outstanding. You travel on the buses with them, and from point A to point B, and from the barracks down to where we were going. And I had a car at the time, but...
Did you go out with your wife?
Yeah.
What was the married quarters like?
Very good. Very good.
Could you describe them? Because we've not mentioned married quarters before. I mean, you've never been in them before, but I mean...
Well, I had a married quarter at the Tanley Barracks, but that was one of the old houses, one of the old places. It's very nice, but...
So what were they like in Germany? Could you describe them?
The houses in Germany were... they all had cellars, because in the main, your boilers were in the cellar, and you had coke delivered sort of every 2 weeks, and they'd put it down the cellar, and you had your boiler in the cellar. The first one that I had was you walked in the door, and the stairs were on your left, going up the stairs, and you walked through to the living room or sitting room, whatever you called it, and the kitchen was on the right. You had a dining area at the end of the living room. I think I had three bedrooms which were, I mean, in excellent condition. They're fairly new actually, this particular one, and they were very nice. The army issued everything really if you wanted it. All the furniture was very good, and if you wanted anything changed, then they'd change it through the army. Not very quick, but they did it eventually. If they found it was found it was necessary, some people, depending, some people didn't look after their places, that's the way they live, and they would get sort of a pre-march out. They knew they were moving at a certain time, so a month before that, they would have given them a pre-march out, which meant that somebody would come around and check out everything, furniture, carpets, curtains, equipment. If they needed replacing, they would replace them. And ready for them moving out. They had to pay for it if there was any damage, which some of them had astronomical bills.
Would everybody have a pre-march?
No, not everybody.
So it's only if you were suspected of it?
Some people, they knew, lived that way, so they would have a march out. We know her. Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
How did this settle your wife in, and how did she, settle in herself? Because was she an army from an army
no,
family?
No.
How did she settle into married quarters? I mean,
she's one of these women who just can move in and sort it out, they settled in very well, actually. Very well.
What was done to sort of keep the wives happy? Because, it's a long old day and the exercises and all the rest of it, you know, when you're away, I presume.
Well, they had a wives' club. I mean, it depended on the age of the children, whether the wives could get away and this sort of thing to the wives' club. But they had wives' clubs.
What did they offer for them? I mean,
I don't know what they used to do, actually. Probably sit and talk and drink coffee and this sort of thing. One or two things which the... they decide, like social evenings. The wives could go to social evenings. They arrange it through them. Other than that, they just find their own joint. I mean, there was everybody within the same boat. So the wives. I think some of the wives used to get together and have their coffee mornings and that together and go out together during the day if we were away, when we were away. They seem to get on all right.
Was there any disapproval of you being married as an NCO? I mean, no. Because in the olden days they did object to people getting married.
I think they prefer people to be married now. Well, they did at that time anyway, because it sort of kept you on a level keel, It kept you on an even keel. Kept you off the street, so to speak.
Would you be able to take her into the mess, the side of the first?
Oh, yeah.
Every night or just on special
occasions? At that time, you could take her in... every night, if you wanted, yeah.
Would she go often, or depending on the kids?
Yeah, we used to go regularly at the weekends, because she normally had something happening on a Saturday night, a mess night or something, some games or something. So just for an evening out, really. It was better than going down the town. So, we used to go in most evenings, most weekends, rather. During the week, you were too shattered by the time you got home, so we used to... Well, we didn't have telly then, but the radio and crosswords and this sort of thing.
And did you have kids while you were out there? Or
yeah, I had three when I went out there. So we were three fairly young together, actually. I think it was about 14 months between them, something like that.
What was the army like as far as it treated children?
I think they were very good. They had their own schools, had military schools.
Were they good?
They all seemed to be, anyway. I mean, I travel around quite a bit now, but since that day. But when mine went to school, it all seemed very good. Cool.
You were happy with the education?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to sound too bad for it. I liked it. Some of the schools were very good. Very good.
Now, anything you remember happening? They were out there for quite a while. Anything else before the amalgamation? I think the amalgamation was 29th of August,
1959. Yeah.
Anything before that?
I don't think there was a great deal, except for exercise, of course. It was always exercise done. I don't think there was too much.
What about Chris as company commander? I mean, you've said quite a bit about him. Was it just the same? Was he just? Was there anything special about the way he was a company commander? Or I only ask because he had such a distinguished career. Was he anything special as company commander?
I think he was the best, actually.
Now, what made him the best of the lot? Because that's quite, because you'd had some good ones.
Had some good ones. I'd known him a long time. I don't know why, but he seemed, well, the size of him for a start. He was a big man. He stood out. He knew exactly what, he seemed to know exactly what the men wanted. And if he decided that the men wanted something, then he got what the men wanted from wherever, the CEO or whatever, because I think he knew where he was going, and I think he influenced a lot of the senior officers above him, because he was, at that time, he was, I suppose, reasonably junior. Although, saying that, I think he was the youngest major in the British Army at one time, when he was out with the African Rifles, I think, at one time. But everything he seemed to do came off.
And how did he treat you as his platoon sergeant? Yeah, you were one of his platoon sergeants.
Yeah, good.
Who was your company sergeant major, if you remember?
The company sergeant major at that time was Holden, I think, yes.
Do you know his first
Holden,
name?
Holden, Ted. He died now, a few years ago.
And what was Ted Holden like as a CSM?
He was ex-para, ex-SAS. He was in Crete during the troubles. He was a good company sergeant major. He was smart, very disciplinarian. He liked his drink. Didn't we all, but sometimes. And I think the guys used to, they weren't exactly frightened of him, but I think they used to respect him as a company sergeant major.
And who was the RSM?
The RSM at that time would be Chatting.
Still Tim Chatting?
Tim Chatting, yeah.
So we've done him. Yeah. What about the colonel? Who would that be then?
Murray... Colonel. Murray. I'll think of it in a minute.
What was he like?
He seemed quite good. I mean, didn't have much contact with him at all, except for probably the CEO's parade or something like that. But he seemed reasonable as far as some of the others. Probably not as good as some of the others, but he seemed as though he knew what was happening.
Now, what about the amalgamation? So that was on, you know, as we said, on the 29th of
before
August.
Before the amalgamation, because you had the trip in the colour, the last trip in the colour of the Royal Norfolk.
Tell me about that.
The RSM at that time was Rainer. It wasn't Chatting. It was Rainer. And he said that he wanted me to carry the colour on the troop. Trip in the colour. We had, I think, 4 or 5 weeks, more or less continuous practice for the actual day. It's a day, and it went off.
Where did it take place?
In Islington, on the square, on the parade square. All the wives were there with the children. A lot of the units from around attended. I was quite proud to carry the colour, and as a sergeant, and it went off very well. The ensign I handed the colour over to eventually, or the RSM handed the colour over to, was Lieutenant Bailey, Dan Bailey, and I worked with him a lot during the parade, picking up the colours from the officers' mess and this sort of thing, and in fact. the other escort when we marched off was a national serviceman. He came from Norwich, actually. And that's at the end, of course, after the parade. I didn't get home very early that day. I couldn't remember.
You went for a drink. Was it very tense? I know you're very proud.
But you'd done it. You'd done so much drill on it and so much practice on it that it more or less sort of came second nature to you, really. It was a tense because you only need one little mistake and everything went wrong. So the whole sort of the system fell down along the way. So it was slightly tense, yeah. And because after we marched off and went back to the office of the mess and opened the champagne, it was a good day was had by all.
And that was shortly before the inauguration.
That was probably about a month or so before the amalgamation.
Now, what preparations were made for the amalgamation?
As far as I can recall, what happened was that we knew each company had been allocated X number of people to make up the company. So you had the X number of Royal Norfolks on parade. Each company had everybody on parade. And the Suffolks paraded as well beside us. And what happened was that the Suffolks then moved over to the companies that they were allocated. So you each had your companies made up, and Suffolks and Norfolks were working about trying to get 50-50 as far as possible. It wasn't always possible, but so 50% Suffolks, 50% Norfolks. And the NCOs, any NCOs that were allocated to the companies as required. That was all done on the square.
Now, were there far too many in each company, if two battalions, you know?
Well, a lot of people had left. I mean, the National Servicemen were sort of the ones that they hadn't. If they the National Servicemen had left, they hadn't replaced them, knowing that the amalgamation had taken place, so that when the Suffolks came in, they filled those places that were left vacant by the National Servicemen who had left. So it worked out quite well. And after that, everything went swimmingly. Well, it appeared to be anyway, as far as I was concerned.
The two methods of doing it, one is to have Norfolk companies and Suffolk companies, and the other one is to have 50-50 mix, or near as you can get it. Now, you definitely went for the 50-50 mix, but some of the other battalions in the East End Regiment didn't.
That's quite correct. That's quite correct. They did.
How did you?
I know we went over to the amalgamation of the Beds and Hearts and Essex, who were in. Where were they in? They were in Germany. I can't remember exactly where they were now. But we went over there and for their parade, their amalgamation parade. And we also went over there a few weeks later after that. And you went virtually to one end of the mess to speak to somebody in the Essex and the other end of the mess to speak to somebody in the Beds and Hearts. They didn't seem to mix at all initially. What happened at the end of it, I don't know. And they became the 2nd Battalion, called the Poachers. So I thought that out of the three battalions, the 1st Battalion were the best amalgamation, I think.
And this was because you just mixed.
Plus the fact that a lot of the senior NCOs and officers knew one another, had met before and always got on well together, the Suffolks and Norfolks. So I think this was the reason for it. Plus the fact that the soldiers themselves were very much alike, the Norfolk and the Suffolks. I mean, you're